ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let us recite from the verse number 13. अद्वेष्टा सर्वभूतानां मैत्रः करुण एव च निर्ममो निरहंकारः समदुःखसुखः क्षमे संतुष्टः सततं योगी यतात्मा दृढनिश्चयः मय्यर्पितमनो बुद्धिः यो मद्भक्तः स मे प्रियः। These verses are already done. We are just reviewing them short, briefly. Yo mad bhaktah same priyah. Yo mad bhaktah. This devotee of mine, who is such, me priyah, he is dear to me. Not only just bhakta, but yo mad bhaktah. The devotee who possesses his attributes is a devotee who is very dear to me. As you know, this is an elaboration of what Lord Krishna started saying in the 7th chapter, where Lord Krishna said, Artha jignyasu artharthi jnani cha bhartarshava. Said there are 4 devotees of mine, or you can say that the devotees in these 4 stages of devotion. Artha, the first stage of devotion where a person reaches out for God or Ishvara when he or she is in great difficulty. Artha. In great distress, when no other way is found, then you reach out to Ishvara to help me. Please help me. Artharthi, second level of devotee is the one who reaches out to Ishvara whenever he is in any need. Artharthi, any worldly need. He looks upon Ishvara to fulfill those needs. Jignyasuhu, the third level of devotee who worships Ishvara for knowing, because he wants to know Ishvara. Jnani, the fourth level of devotee, one who knows Ishvara. And knowing Ishvara in the true sense is knowing him as one's own self. The knowledge of Ishvara really comes to a total fulfillment when Ishvara is known as one's own self. Meaning when there is no distance whatever between the devotee and Ishvara. That is the ultimate level of surrender, where the devotee surrenders everything. Even his own sense of individual ultimately is totally surrender. He does not demand that he should even exist as an individual separate from Ishvara. Jnani. So Lord Krishna says that all these devotees are great. Udaraha sarva evaite jnani tvatmaiva mevatam. All the devotees are great because they are my devotees. But the wise person, the wise devotee, knows me or worships me, he first worships me and then knows me as his own self. Tesham jnani nitya uktaha eka buddhi. So Lord Krishna says, of all these devotees, this wise person is always devoted to me, always joined with me, because he knows him as the very self, and therefore effortlessly he is united with me, always united with me. Now, one cannot be always united as long as that requires an effort, because you cannot make a given effort all the time. Being always united with Ishvara is possible when Ishvara is my own self, because the only thing with which I am always united is myself. Nitya yukta hai. Eka bhakti hai. He is only devoted to me and to nothing else, because this wise person knows everything is Ishvara. In his vision there is nothing but Ishvara, and therefore only devoted to Ishvara, and knowing Ishvara is the very self, therefore always united with him. So this is the ultimate level of devotion, when there is no duality whatever between devotee and Ishvara. Priyo hi jnanamoktyartham aham sacha mama priyaha. Priyo hi jnanamoktyartham aham. Lord Krishna says that I am extremely devoted. I am extremely loved, beloved of my devotee. Sacha me priyaha. And he is dear to me. I am extremely dear to my devotee, and he is dear to me. It looks like only the wise person is dear to Lord Krishna and not others, but that's not the point. In fact, there is no other at all. All there is only Krishna. Krishna, Lord alone is. It is this person out of ignorance who think that he is other. And therefore, he is not able to see the devotion or the love of Ishvara that is already there, because he is the very self. So it's not that Ishvara loves somebody, does not love somebody else, because to love is the nature of the self. And therefore, what is Ishvara, and therefore is loved by Ishvara. But only a wise person who knows Ishvara the self sees this fact. Meaning that you already are loved by somebody, but may not see the fact. And somebody sees the fact. That's the only difference. The sun is shining equally for everybody. There are those who experience the light, and there are some who do not experience the light. Those who close the doors and windows, they do not experience the light, even though light is there. That does not mean sun is partial to some people and to other people he is favorable or cruel. He is equal to everybody. So also Ishvara's love is for everybody. But those who have completely opened the windows of their hearts, they know. Other people do not. So when Lord Krishna says that, devotee such as that is dear to me, does not mean others are not dear to him. Only means that this devotee sees my love, experiences, knows my love. He knows me as his own self, and therefore love that I am is very clear to him. So, what was said in the 7th chapter? Sacha me priyaha. I am highly dear to him and he is also dear to me. That is being elaborated in these 8 verses in the 12th chapter. So, Lord Krishna just says, Yo mad bhakta same priyaha. A devotee like this is dear to me. So there, what was mentioned is jnani, or a wise person. So devotion culminates into wisdom. Wisdom culminates in devotion. So knowledge must cultivate in devotion, culminate, and the devotion must culminate in knowledge. At a point where these two do not remain different from each other, that is where the true knowledge and true devotion is. So that is true knowledge, which culminates into devotion, because the love for the self is natural. When Ishvara is known as myself, then love for Ishvara is natural. And so true knowledge will culminate into devotion or love. And true love will culminate into knowledge, because in love there is always an attempt, a constant attempt, to eliminate the distance of separatedness. That's what a person always wants, that there should not be a distance between himself or the one with the one who he loves. And therefore the love culminates into oneness, and knowledge culminates into the love, which both oneness is the same as love. That's the reason why the culmination of love is in knowledge, and culmination of knowledge is in love. That's why it's a jnani bhakta. A bhakta who is, jnani means wise. And because that is where the wisdom is, when it is known as oneness, and that is where there is no... See, again, love is something very spontaneous for a person. We are all spontaneously loving only. But at a given point in time, I love that which I look upon as myself. Love for the self is natural. As you all know, Atman Sukamaya Sarvam Priyam Bhavati. That love for the self is natural. Whatever I love for the sake of myself. But then, what do I love most? Whatever I look upon as myself. It is my perception of what the self is that determines what is most beloved to me. At any point in time, what is most beloved to me is whatever is my perception of the self. Generally, my body is the self. Or my mind is the self. Or the ego is the self. That is my usual perception of myself. And that's either the body or the mind or the ego is the most beloved to me. And I am willing to sacrifice anything for that. So, a person is willing to sacrifice anything for the sake of whatever that person calls the self. Sometimes, I mean, there was a time when people in India thought that the country was most beloved. And they were willing to sacrifice even their life for the sake of country because that was considered as the self. To some person, his child or family is so beloved at that time, he can sacrifice himself to protect them because that's the self. So whatever is looked upon as self, at a given point in time, is always the most beloved. And my love pours out for that. Except that my notion of what the self is keeps on changing depending upon situation. That's the reason why different things become the object of my love at different times and places because my notion of what the self is changes. To somebody, the Guru is the most beloved. He looks upon the self. Ishvara is most beloved, looks upon the self. But then, as I said, love for the self is natural. What is important is, what do I know as myself? That's where knowledge comes in. When we are told that, look, this body is not you, that's not yourself. Your son is not yourself. The body is not yourself. The ego is not yourself. Asti bhadi priyam, satchidananda is yourself. When that becomes my knowledge, that becomes most beloved. So then when Lord Krishna says, he is beloved to me, that means that the devotee, I am most beloved to the devotee also because he knows me as my own self. As his own self. And so this devotee, the ideal devotee, who is totally identified with Ishvara, who knows Ishvara as everything, or who knows Ishvara as his own self, how will he be? So how does the devotion, how does the knowledge, how does it manifest in us? Sometimes I ask a question, Swamiji, how do I know if I am making progress? Well, here are the indicatory signs to tell us what kind of progress we are making. Adveshta sarva-bhutana. The devotee, the wise devotee of the Lord, sarva-bhutanam adveshta, one who is no dvesha, who is no aversion for anybody. Meaning that from my mind, aversion or hatred goes away completely. When can it go away completely? What is one thing towards whom I never have aversion? What is one thing that I never hate is myself. Even my hatred for somebody else is because of my love for myself. So whatever is all manifestation of love for myself. Adveshta sarabhutana. He does not hate anybody. Meaning that he looks upon everything as his own self. When he sees the self, his own self, as the self of all. Then alone there cannot be hatred for anybody. Otherwise, there is likely to be hatred or aversion for one whom I do not look upon myself. It is not that I hate everything that is not myself, but I certainly hate that which is unfavorable to me. I hate that which is an obstacle to my happiness. Then when I look upon somebody or something as different from myself, it's likely that I will look upon that as an obstacle, in which case that thing or person will become an object of my hate or aversion. Adveshta sarva-bhutanam. He has no hatred, aversion for anybody. Now anybody will include anybody. What about those who hate him? Anybody includes that also. Meaning that the person has no hatred even for those who hate him. Now, that's the culmination of the large-heartedness, of accommodation. He accommodates everything. Because, as I said, I always accommodate myself. When what is myself, everything is accommodated. Therefore, even that hatred also doesn't look up to him as a hatred. Even when somebody hates, he only looks upon that as a sign of love. Is it possible? When somebody hates you, how can you look upon that as love? Sometimes it happens when our dear, beloved child, whatever the child does, sometimes child gets angry and kicks me, then also I don't think that child hates me. I don't look upon that as the hatred of the child, that my child hates me. I continue to love the child regardless of what the child does. Is it not so? Sometimes a little child, I hate you, Ma, kicks you. Ma doesn't hate him, doesn't kick him. Generally, the mom is in good mind, of course. Mom also being human being, sometimes, you know, she ceases to be a mom and becomes a human being. Then it's a different matter. Happens. But as long as she's mother, regardless of how the child behaves, there's never, whatever behavior, does not invoke hatred. Because that this is my child, that thing does not go away regardless of what the child does. It is not the behavior because of which it is my child, it is my child. Unqualified acceptance. Similarly also in the wise person's mind, there is unqualified acceptance. Does not judge anybody by their behavior. He sees whatever is as nothing but Ishvara. Either you see everything as Ishvara or see as yourself. One of the two. So, devotee of Saguna Brahma sees everything as Ishvara. Then also the same. Or, the one worshipping Nirguna Brahma sees everything as a self. Adveshta Sarvabhutanam. So, all of these tells us what is the reality. When do we know the reality? When this is how we become. Or more clear the perception of reality, closer we become. We come to this ideal person who is described. Adveshta sarabhutanam is the ideal. Like the role model. So whenever you want to decide how should I act in a given situation, then think of this person. How is he? Adveshta sarabhutanam. He does not hate anybody. Is no aversion for anybody. By saying that hatred will not go away, aversion may not go away, but it is I will not feed that hatred. I can create distance with hatred and not identify with it. Okay, hatred is there. Aversion is there because that's habit of the mind. But then I will not feed upon that. I will not justify that. I'll create a distance and try to neutralize that hatred. When hatred comes, I seek to neutralize that. With what? Compassion or love. Hatred is because of intolerance. I cannot tolerate somebody. I cannot tolerate somebody's behavior. I cannot tolerate somebody's actions. I cannot tolerate somebody's attitudes. And that's why the ever hatred comes. Tolerance, acceptance, compassion, large-heartedness. Thus, what is natural or intrinsic for the wise person becomes a value for the seeker who wants to be like that. That's the reason why whenever opportunity presents itself, Lord Krishna makes it a point to describe the wise person. In the second chapter is called Sthita Prajna, the man of abiding wisdom. Third chapter is called Karma Yogi. Fourth chapter also called Karma Yogi. In the 12th chapter is called Bhakta. 14th chapter will call him Gunatita, one who transcends guna. Same thing. But since he is described from different perspective, therefore different names are there. But you find the traits are the same. The description of Sthita Prajna is not very different from the description of this Bhakta, or not different from the description of a Gunatita. Adveshta Sarabhutanam. He doesn't hate anybody. But he's not hating somebody is all right. But you may just indifferent to that person. I don't hate anybody. Okay. No, Maitra. When you don't hate anybody, then what happens? Maitra. He's friendly to everybody. He's a well-wisher of everybody. This Sarabhutanam should be added everywhere, you know? Sarabhutanam Maitra. Adveshta Sarabhutanam Maitra Sarabhutanam Karuna. Compassionate to all. Wherever I see somebody suffering, karuna, compassion. Wherever I see somebody good, happy, maitra. Somebody hateful, unhateful. Different kinds of people are there. Yoga Shastra talks of four kinds of people and the attitude we should have towards them. Maitri, mudita, karuna, upeksha. These are four attitudes that prescribed by the Yoga Shastra. In our day-to-day interactions, we come across these four kinds of people. People who are like us, people who are better than us, people who are not as good as, and people who are opposed to us. Four kinds of people. Maitri, towards people who are like you, Maitri, friends. Mudita, people are better than you. Don't be jealous of them. Mudita, be happy. Be happy for what they are. Identify with them. If I was in his position, how would I feel? Oh, he got promotion, I did not get promotion. Don't be jealous. Suppose you were in his position, how would you have felt? I would have been so happy. Feel that happiness, as though you are him. Each of these values is meant to only assert the oneness of the self. The extent to which they assert the oneness of the self, to that extent the value becomes possible. Maitri, mudita, karuna. Person is not like you. Swamiji, look at him. You know, he is a dishonest person. He cheats, he tells lies. Compassionate. Don't hate him. Be compassionate to him. And upeksha. Somebody who hates you. Okay, just upeksha. Don't retaliate. So non-retaliating to the person who may be hateful, not hating the person who may not be acceptable otherwise, being friendly to the person who are like him, being happy with those who are better than him. Maitri, mudita, karuna, upeksha. Here also, dveshta, sarabhutana. He doesn't hate anybody. Maitra, he's friendly to all. Karuna, he's compassionate. Nirmamo nirahankara. He has no sense of possession, that this is mine. He does not own anything. Not owner of anything. But Swamiji, what will he do? He doesn't need to own anything, that's all. When you say he doesn't have a sense of ownership, meaning that he is free from the need to own anything. Either everything is his, or nothing is his. So for a Vedanta, nothing is mine. For a Bhakta, everything is mine. Either way, it's okay. Because I didn't know Ishvara. Ishvara possesses all, and everything is mine. Meaning that he lays claim on everything. But what satisfaction would you have if everything was yours? That satisfaction he experiences. Santushta satatam yogi. Always contented, always satisfied with himself. And they were satisfied with everything. So self-satisfaction automatically comes. more the divisions are there, stronger the sense of duality is there, stronger the sense of dissatisfaction is there. More the distance is there between myself and the world or myself and Ishvara, more sense of dissatisfaction or sense of separatedness is there. Less that separatedness is there, more sense of satisfaction is there. Santushta satatam is always contented, always happy with himself, and therefore happy with what is. Nirmamaha, therefore free from need to possess anything. Nirahankara, free from a sense of identity. I'm so and so, that's ahankara. We need to identify. I mean, not an identity, Swami, without identity you cannot survive. So identity is our mechanism of survival. Ownership is our mechanism of security. Feel secure when I own things, when I feel that, okay, I'm secure, I have this, 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 and therefore I need not worry. Whatever I need is available to me. Whenever I need it, it is available to me. Therefore, I feel secure from the sense for owning things. So an ordinary person owns things and wants to own things and need to feel secure. One who has discovered security from himself doesn't need to own anything. And we always want to identify ourselves, I'm so and so. By special dress, special hairstyle, special whatever, I want to be different from others, want to distinguish. Seeking some kind of a security in a sense of identity. Identity crisis. But this fellow has given up, free from all identity. He doesn't need to possess an identity. Because he discovers security from his own self, therefore he doesn't have to seek security from his personality, that I'm wealthy, or that I'm a scholar, that I'm strong, I'm powerful, I'm well known. So from wealth, name, fame, possession, etc., people draw their sense of security, sense of well-being. He doesn't need that. He knows himself as limitless, as infinite, as all, and therefore no need to have any identity. Nirmamo nirahankara, no ahankara, meaning no sense of identity. Therefore, if he is lowliest of the lowest and higher of the highest, he is most humble person. Humility comes from a strength. Humility doesn't come from weakness. Humility is not an action. Humility is a reality. Most humble. Because he doesn't possess anything. And therefore, he has no sense of identity also that I am so and so. Nirmamo nirahankara. All values opposite to what the world is teaching us. The world teaches values which are quite contrary to this. And the kind of values that we have been entertaining and cultivating so far especially, that you must identify yourself, you must assert yourself, you must do this, otherwise nobody will listen to you. You will never progress. Which may have its own, you know, need, of course, as long as there is a certain need, you do those things. But here now, you want to become free from the very thing which you needed to assert. When you realize that asserting is a burden, is not a virtue. As long as you think it's a virtue, so long you do that. When you find it's not a virtue, it is now a burden, then you want to get rid of that. Don't get rid of that until it becomes a burden, you know. You should get rid of something which has become a burden. Don't get rid of something which is useful. That's not practical. Meaning you don't start practicing the values left and right without understanding, you know, what, where they're coming from. Only when the priorities of life have become clear to us, realities have become clear, priorities have become clear, then alone I start following these values, not otherwise. Otherwise there'll be constant conflict, Swamiji. You follow these values and look how the world treats me. Look what happens to me. If what world treats you is important to you, they don't follow these values. Right? There's nothing wrong that you want certain treatment from the world. It's not a crime. It's all right. But be realistic as to what your needs are and accordingly live your life. Otherwise, you adopt values which are based on a different goal and you are entertaining a different kind of a goal, then constant conflict is there. How can you perform action without expecting a result and stuff like that, you know? Don't. You cannot. Because results are important to you. And therefore, perform action with expectation of result. When you realize that the results, makes me more dependent, I want to become free from that, then all right. And therefore, we should live a life based on our present understanding. But if this is clear to you, this is a happy person. If you value for real freedom, real happiness, you can see this person is free. This mamakara, ahankara, mamakara means the need to possess things that makes me bound. Ahankara, proclaiming my identity, makes me bound. If I see that, ahankara or identity doesn't give me freedom. In fact, it restricts me. It creates separatedness. It isolates me. If that becomes clear to me, then I do not support ahankara anymore. I don't feed ahankara. I want to get rid of it. Nirmo nirahankara sama dukkha sukha kshami. All the time this sama, being even-minded in pleasure and pain. So even-mindedness is a great value. Lord Krishna teaches that again and again. Samatvam yoga uchade, that's where it started. Samatvam yoga uchade. Being even-minded, where? Siddhya-siddhyo samabhutva. In success and failure. Because it is taught with reference to karma. Therefore, with reference to outcome. With outcome is success or failure, being even-minded. But that applies to all pairs of opposites. Not confined to success and failure, all pairs of opposites, which will be described here. Manapamanayostulya, tulyo mitra, in 14th chapter also. In 6th chapter also. Nirmamo nirhankara samadukha sukha. How can you be even-minded in pleasure and pain? Pleasure is pleasure and pain is pain. How can we even-minded? Unless you're insensitive. Are they asking us to become so insensitive that the pain doesn't touch me at all? Then the pleasure also will not touch you. No, we are not talking about an insensitive person who doesn't feel anything. An extremely sensitive person, but sees someone who sees something beyond the pleasure and pain. That pleasure and pain are only a superficial manifestation of reality which is more fundamental. That pleasure and pain are the form, the costume in which something else comes to me. He looks upon everything as manifest of Ishvara. So as pleasure also Ishvara is there, and pain also Ishvara alone is there. And therefore, pleasure and pain, the form is not important, the costume is not important, the one that comes in the costume, that is important. That is why he is even-minded. Nobody can be even-minded in pleasure and pain. If I judge a situation as pleasant, and I judge another situation as painful, I can never be even-minded. If I am even-minded, then there is something wrong with me. To call this as painful and then not feel anything. To call this as pleasant and not to feel anything, that is not right. Moment you brand a situation as pleasant, you will react with happiness. And when you brand something as painful, you will react with unhappiness. It's natural. But it does not react because it doesn't brand situation as pleasant or painful. He looks upon them merely as nothing but manifestation of Ishvara. Ishvara comes in the situation that is pleasant or painful. Like your child, you don't mind. The father, when he's going to work, he's all dressed up. When the child comes to hug him, he says, stay away from me. Because that fellow is dirty, The child has played in the street. And so his clothes are all soiled. He wants to hug his father. Not now. Mother doesn't matter, He wants to hug, doesn't matter. So mother does not judge a child just because the child is clothes are dirty or what it is. So whether you look upon, what do you look at? Is it the dress that you look at is dirty? Don't come to me. Or is my child? Is never dirty or no dirty? So you look at the costume or look at the one that is wearing the costume. So pleasure and pain are all the costumes. The wise, the devotee does not miss. Just as the mother does not miss the child, regardless of what form the child comes in, so also the devotee does not miss Ishvara, in whichever form he comes. And that's why he is even-minded, not because he is not sensitive. But as I said, he is sensitive to something more than just the pleasure and pain. Samudukha sukha kshami. Always forgiving, accommodating. He accommodates everything, forgets, forgives everything, or accommodates. That's what our Swamiji would like, you know. So who is naturally accommodating? In forgiving, somehow there is a sense of obliging somebody. I forgive you. Although that's not what it means, but that's how it's understood usually. Forgiveness is understood as something that I'm doing out of obligation. That's why accommodation is a better word. I accommodate. Everything is fine. I'm so large-hearted, everything is okay. The kshama, the forgiveness or accommodation comes out of total large-heartedness, the compassion. He's become so accommodative. He accommodates everything. Because he doesn't lose anything by accommodating everything. Because, as I said, from his standpoint, what is Ishvara? In whichever form he is. Santushtaha satatam. Always satisfied, always contented. Because contented with himself, therefore, he's contented with everything. Satatam santushta. Always contented. Cannot be an action, cannot be an attitude. When you add satatam, all the time happy or contented, then it cannot be by effort. All the time has to be spontaneous. He's spontaneously contented because he's content with himself. He sees himself as a complete being. Yogi, always yogi, has always united, always together as a person. Yogi means one who is together as a person. One who is mastered over himself. One is mastered over his own mind, master of the sense organs, a master of his own personality is a yogi. Satatam yogi. Again, join satatam with everything. Santushta satatam, satatam yogi. Always the master of himself. Because his sense organs, his mind, his whole personality is totally pure. And therefore, totally identified with Ishvara, with the Self. Yatatma dhranischeha, yatatma, one who is master over himself, dhranischeha, one who is chara, the conviction is very firm that what is Ishvara? He sees that fact, and therefore, one with firm conviction. Mayar pita mano buddhihi, one whose mind and intellect, both of them are centered upon Ishvara. Yumad bhakta, same me bhakta, same priya. So this bhakta of mine is very dear to me. Next one, Lord Krishna says, Yasmano dvijate lokaha,
lokano dvijate chayaha.
Harsha marsha bhayo dvegaihi mukto yassa cha me priyah. Yasmanna udvijate lokah. One who does not become the source of fear for anybody. Udvega. Udvega means being perturbed, either because of fear or because of anxiety. One who is never a cause of anxiety to somebody, one who is never a cause of fear to anybody. His presence seems to remove all the fear and anxiety. He never becomes a cause of fear or anxiety. Nobody feels afraid of him. Because he is a non-demanding person. A demanding person can cause fear or anxiety upon another person. When I make a demand upon somebody, then the person becomes uncomfortable in my presence. We become uncomfortable in presence of someone who is a demanding person, who wants me to be different from what I am, who does not accept me as I am, who accepts me conditionally, or wants me to be different from what I am, then I am not comfortable. I am comfortable in presence of someone who accepts me as I am, who unconditionally accepts me. It is a rare thing, of course, but so our level of comfort with a person is determined by the extent to which we are accepted. The ideal condition is of a mother and an infant. Infant in the lap of the mother. Total acceptance. The child is totally comfortable and totally secure, you know, because the mother also accepts the child, as long as infant, because infant is totally devoted and surrendered, one with mother. And so mother feels also a total acceptance from that infant. When the fellow grows to terrible too, and then starts expressing his individuality, and then he becomes 3 or 4 years old, and says, "Mom, do I have to do that?" You know, and he starts, then it's the unconditional love, you know, I think slowly will start dissipating. By the time the fellow becomes teenager and talks back, then the end of it. But infant, the unconditional acceptance. Infants also feels unconditionally accepted. So totally he can sleep there without any worry, anxiety at all. Feels totally secure. So how the mother is to an infant, so also the wise person is to everybody. Yasman no dvijate lokaha. One never causes any disturbance, any perturbance, any fear in anybody, because he makes no demand, because he accepts everybody and everything as it is. Kshami, accommodative. He's so large-hearted that everything is fine. But he's a sinner, that also is fine. He's a liar, there's no problem. To this person there is no problem. When he's a criminal, no problem. Because that is just the outer appearance. In the core, he's Ishvara, he's my own self. In the core, even what you call a criminal also is my own self. So-called criminality is just incidental. These are all incidental things, not inherent. Inherently is my own self. He sees this fact. They were totally accepting, non-demanding. Therefore, it does not cause fear or anxiety in anybody. Yasman no dvijate lokaha, lokan no dvijate chayaha. And who also has no fear from anybody, who is not afraid of anything or anybody. When are we afraid? When there is a fear of losing something. Fear always is a result of attachment. Attachment means I'm holding on to something. There's a need to hold on to something. When I look upon something or somebody as a source of security or happiness, then that becomes very important to me. Then I don't know, let go of it. And when there is a possibility of letting go or being snatched away, then there is a fear. Wise person has no fear because he does not depend on anything for his security or happiness. He himself is a source of happiness to himself. He sees total security in his own self. And therefore, he has nothing to lose. He has no attachment of any kind. He is not dependent upon anything for his well-being. And therefore, he doesn't own anything. Doesn't possess anything. He has nothing to lose. Where is the fear? Fear can be if there is a possibility of losing something which is important to you, which is dear to you. You may not even care to lose certain things, you know. Somebody takes the utensils, you don't care, and you know, whatever. Some tire takes, you know, some batteries, okay, no problem. A lot of things don't matter to us that much. Certain things matter. No, Swami, this I can't lose. This is given by my mother-in-law, this is given by my father. This is very precious, you know, how much it costs, whatever. So things that are important to us, even a possibility of losing that causes fear, let alone losing. Fear is because of the possibility. So where there is an attachment, there is always fear contained in attachment. There is no attachment, no partiality, no cruelty, therefore no fear. Lokan no dvijite jaha, who is not perturbed by anybody, who is not afraid of anybody, who is not, you know, there is no anxiety, there is no fear, no perturbance, nobody causes any fear or unhappiness in him. Harsha marsha bhayodvegahi muktaha. free from harsh elation, amarsh intolerance, bhaya, fear, udvega, anxiety. So free from elation, intolerance, harsha, amarsha, bhayodvega, hi mukto yasya cha me priyaha. All the result of the wisdom or the love. Wisdom also will do that, and total love also will do that. And I said both are one. When there is absolute love also, there is no intolerance. You tolerate everything. You are always happy. There is no elation, no depression. You are always happy. In wisdom also you know everything has their own self. Therefore there is no question of intolerance, no question of fear, no question of any kind of reaction. And then we come to the verse number 16.
Anapekshasu chirdakshah udasino gatavyasah sarvarambha parityagi yo madbhaktasame priyah.
Anapekshah, one is free from apeksha. Apeksha means expectation. Anapekshah, one who is free from all expectations. Expectation, desire, so demand, one is free from all expectation, all demand, all desire. Dehendriya vishaya sambandhadishu apeksha visheshu pi. Shankaracharya says that. It is some dependence is there. On my body? On the body, sense organs, mind, intellect, at least to them, upon them I am dependent. Says, no, no. So those things upon which a person is normally dependent for his existence. Because my existence depends upon the body. If the body is there, then I am there. If the body is not, then I am not there. Therefore, existence of the body is very important to me. He is not even dependent upon that. Because he does not equate his existence with the existence of body. He knows that body is because he is not the other way around. For an ignorant person, I am because the body is. Therefore, body becomes important to me. I am because ego is, therefore ego becomes important to me. But in this case, the equation is other way around. I am therefore the body is. I am therefore the mind is. I am therefore the ego is. I am the source of all of them. And therefore, they are dependent upon me, I am not dependent upon them. This reality being very clear, therefore, he is not dependent. That doesn't mean that he just gives up his body like that, but the point is that his relationship is different. That's the idea. The relationship of an ordinary person and the relationship that the wise person is are different. It is this perception that we are talking about. Understand that this non-expectancy is not an action. That he does not make a demand, is non-demandingness is not an action. Unexpectedness is not an action. It is his perception. That does not mean that he doesn't take care of his body. So Swami, you say that he doesn't depend on his body, but he takes bath every day and he cleans the body and he takes medicine. So what? Not that he doesn't take care of the body. It's not a this is not a description of vyavahara, understand. This is wisdom or the knowledge. It doesn't mean that he acts in a certain way or does not act in a different way. This is not a description of action. Description of his wisdom and therefore the attitudes and values that he has. So what we have to imitate are the values. Therefore Lord Krishna does not describe any actions here. Even though Arjuna asked the question, kima sita vrajeta kim, sitati kim prabhaseta, how does he talk, how does he walk, how does he sit, Lord Krishna interpreted them in a different way. So we are not imitating here the way of his sitting and talking and walking. We want to imitate what is behind all of that. And we would not be able to know that. That's what Lord Krishna is telling us. Even if a wise person is there, we may not be able to recognize. So he's giving us recognition of what is inside there. Where is he coming from? It's not what the person does. Even that also is important. I'm not saying it's not important. But then, more important is where he's coming from. Anapeksha is coming from a wisdom where he doesn't have any need, any becomes free from need, that way he doesn't expect anything. Apeksha means an expectation also arises from our need. I expect something from other persons only because then alone I feel comfortable and happy. As I am not comfortable, and when you do something for me, then I become comfortable. That's why there is an expectancy that you do something for me. Therefore, that we expect, there is expectation from others, is because of our need. Because when the expectation is fulfilled, I feel comfortable with myself. If the expectation is not fulfilled, I do not feel comfortable with myself. If you behave in a certain way, then I feel comfortable with myself. Behave in a different way, I do not feel comfortable with myself. So for me to feel comfortable with myself, I need you to conduct yourself in a certain way. Look at this. If you bow down to me, I feel comfortable with myself. Therefore, I want you to bow down to me. If you don't do that, I feel rejected. And therefore, I don't feel comfortable with myself. Therefore, I need you to do something. Look at this. For me to feel comfortable with myself, I need you. Which you? You who conducts yourself in a certain way. That's the you that I need for me to feel comfortable with myself. But if I am comfortable with myself as I am, then I don't need you to do something to make me comfortable. Understand, all of our expectations arise from our need for somebody else to make us comfortable. Because we do not find ourselves comfortable as we are, therefore we need the world to make us feel comfortable. And only when the world conducts itself in a certain way that I am comfortable, otherwise I am not comfortable. Therefore, do this and don't do that. Don't say that. Don't sit like that. Whatever. Expectations are there. Even mother keeps instructing me, she says, hey, don't say this. Sit like this. When you go with Swamiji, sit like that. The child stretches the legs and says, man, don't do that. Why? Because Swami will say, look, what kind of mother you are. You have not trained your child properly. So she is concerned about being judged, you know, by the Swami based on the behavior of the child. Otherwise, she would not mind. At home she does not mind because the father does not judge her based on what the child does. Otherwise they're also, hey, when your father comes, don't talk like this, you know, don't tell him this. And later on that will happen. Because if he feels the father will judge me based on what the child does, then she will expect the child to act in a certain way, dress in a certain way. Because when you go to school, dress this way. When you talk to your friends, act this way. Because they will judge you and then they will judge me. So our expectations from everybody are all meant for our own self, for us to feel comfortable with ourselves. That is wisdom and knowledge, when one has discovered a comfort with one's own self. Santushta satatam yogi, atmaneva atmana tushta. One is satisfied with himself, by himself. There were no expectations, anapeksha. And the Swami, you would say that everything has become a luxury for this person. A samsari makes luxuries, converts luxuries into necessities. The spirituality begins when the necessities start becoming luxuries. And what is the extent of that? When the body also becomes a luxury. A luxury is something that you need not have. It's good if you have it, you need not have. So therefore, dehendriya vishaya sambandhadishu apeksha visheshu api. Even the body, sense organs, and things that are considered important to other people, even they all have become luxury. That the body is alive is a luxury. That I am breathing is a luxury. That I am is a luxury. Everything is a luxury. Luxury is what you enjoy as it is. And so even the body also has become luxury for this person. There was no expectation. So family is a luxury. World is a luxury. Life is a luxury. What you do is a luxury. Luxury is what you enjoy. That means you enjoy the very existence. No qualification. That I enjoy myself only when I am such and such or when I do a given thing. Nadveshta kushalam karma kushale nanu sanchate. In the 18th chapter, Lord Krishna says, Nadveshti akushalam karma. He has no dislike for an unpleasant task. What other people will consider unpleasant. So Mahatma Gandhi had no problem in cleaning latrines also, because he did not look upon that as unpleasant. Nobody else would want to do that. He didn't want. It's not unpleasant. And there was no expectation as to how the world should conduct itself to make me feel good. No. So that I should do this only or that. No such demand. No expectation. Whatever is required to be done in a given situation. Whatever. If that means cleaning latrine, fine. It means that nursing somebody, fine. Means feeding somebody, fine. Meaning eating, that also is fine. Anapekshaha. This is a freedom from apeksha. Freedom from all expectation. This also comes again and again. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan pastha manogatan. When becomes free from all kama, all expectations, all needs. That kama, even if you don't translate as desire, becomes free from all needs. Natasarabhuteshu kaschidartha vyapashraya, as third chapter says, he has no dependence upon anything in the whole world. He does not depend upon anything in the whole world for his comfort. Anapeksha, that is freedom from apeksha. We will continue in the next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Badarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Guru Ratmedi Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namah Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om.